Will the clerk please call the roll of the commission?
Commissioner Chi. Commissioner Cole.
Here.
Commissioner Anzani is excused. Commissioner Fuentes.
Present.
Commissioner Gaime.
Here.
Commissioner Hale.
Here.
Chair King. Commissioner Cannelli.
Here.
Commissioner Kong.
Present.
Commissioner Maldonado is excused. Commissioner Molodeskaya.
Here.
Commissioner Moses. Commissioner Ng is excused. Commissioner Potts.
Here.
And the commission has a quorum.
Thank you very much. On behalf of the Immigrant Rights Commission, I want to welcome everyone here. And we're very honored to be co-hosting this meeting with Supervisor David Hu, the President of the Department of the Board of Supervisors. And we want to thank city departments who are also joining us here tonight, as well as a representative from the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. The commission rotates meetings around the city 3 or 4 times a year, and so we're very happy to be being here in District 3. We have a very cool agenda tonight where we're going to be inviting comments on immigration policy, language access, small business, and public safety. We'll be hearing from experts in the community, as well as residents of the community who have their own expertise. And we're looking forward to hearing you address us tonight. I want to thank Amy Chan of President Chu's office, Director Adrian Khan of the Office of Civic Engagement and Immigrant Affairs for helping to organize the event. And I want to remind anyone who would like to speak before the commission tonight, you're welcome to do so. Please let us know if there is a form that you fill out that would be helpful. If you fill out the form so that we know how many people will be speaking to us and in what order. And if you need language assistance, please let a staff member know, and we'll be happy to do our best to accommodate you. At this time, I'd like to introduce to you the President of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, the Honorable David Hu.
Welcome, everyone, to Chinatown and to one of the oldest immigrant communities in our city. It's great to see the Immigrant Rights Commission here. I want to thank, first of all, Chair Hing. For those of you who do not know Professor Hing, he's actually one of our country's foremost experts on immigration law, and it's great to have him have the leadership of this esteemed panel. I also want to thank all the commissioners. I know almost every single one of you as individuals who have been extremely active in not just your respective immigrant community, but more broadly within San Francisco. There are a lot of great topics you are covering tonight, and I want to just touch upon a couple of them briefly. First of all, the topic of language access. Some of you may remember that in 2009, with the help of many of the immigrant rights organizations here in town, we passed a piece of legislation that I sponsored called the Language Access Ordinance. And this is an ordinance to require city departments to ensure that every population in our city can receive city services, hopefully translated in languages relevant to each of our language populations. We held a hearing a couple of months ago where we discovered that this ordinance was not being as enforced as it should. And we also discovered that less than 0.1% of our city budget is devoted to assisting with translation and other language access services. So I want to thank China's for Affirmative Action and other organizations that pushed to include another $500,000 in our city budget that will be managed by our Office of Immigrant Affairs under the leadership of Director Adrian Khan. And we look forward to your ideas and how you think we can best put this money to use to make sure that everyone understands the services that we are providing in city government. When it comes to small business, I want to take a moment just to thank the leadership of our Office of Small Business. Regina DeCondrisi is here, the director of that office, as is Jane Gong, who is fluent in 3 Chinese dialects and can help translate many things and many of the concerns of the 80,000 small businesses that we have in San Francisco. We know it is often very difficult to run a small business in the city, and you should definitely call upon the Office of Small Business if you need help. Related to that, I want to take a moment to thank the Office of Labor Standards Enforcement. We know that we have many recent immigrants who are in employment situations where they may not be receiving either their full share of a minimum wage or health benefits or other benefits related to their employment. Our city, we take the enforcement of our labor and employment laws very seriously. In fact, we also put in a couple hundred thousand additional dollars this year to make sure that we are enforcing our labor and employment laws in every community in the city, but particularly within our immigrant communities. I want to take a moment to also thank our men and women who are here in the bright yellow jackets, our community ambassadors. This is a program that was set up a couple of years ago, which started out of some public safety incidences that occurred in the southeast neighborhoods of the city. When we heard from African American, Latino, and Asian communities of the need for more community outreach and the need for, frankly, city workers that could help escort individuals and really ensure our public safety in conjunction with our police department. So also under the direction of Adrian Pond, the men and women who wear these brightly colored yellow jackets are throughout the city helping immigrant communities, seniors, and other folks really navigate our streets in a safe way. I also want to just take a moment to thank the Commission and all of you who have been supportive of pro-immigrant policies here in San Francisco. I, along with I think everyone here in this room, has supported making sure that our federal government is not improperly investigating immigrants who have been unfairly charged with crimes. I also think it's been very important for this Commission to work with the Board of Supervisors to ensure that our sanctuary city policy is fully enforced, to make sure that immigrants know that they can work with our police department and not become suspects in either immigration or criminal actions because of that cooperation. So with that, I just also want to let you know that if there's anything that I can do, either as the supervisor of District 3 or as the president of your Board of Supervisors, I want to hear from you directly. I also want to take a moment and acknowledge my aide, Amy Chan. Amy, just raise your hand. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to contact either Amy or myself. With that, again, just welcome. It's great to see everyone here. And one of the things that I love most about my job is the opportunity to work with just the tremendous diversity that I see here in this room, working to make San Francisco really the model of what it means to be a city that is open and welcoming of people from every community, of every background, from every country, and every corner of the world. And part of what makes that a wonderful place is our Immigrant Rights Commission. So again, back to the Commission, but thank you all for your service.
Thank you, Supervisor. Thank you very much for your leadership on immigration issues and civil rights issues over the years in San Francisco. Very much appreciated and very much acknowledged by those of us in the immigrant rights community. At this time, we actually do have to take care of one minor piece of business, and that's approval of the minutes from our last meeting of June 11th. Are there any changes or corrections to the minutes? Do I hear a motion to approve? A second? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. The motion carries. We have invited a handful of speakers to begin the evening, and so we're going to do that in a minute, but I do want to remind anyone else who would like to speak to the commission, you're welcome to do so. Please let us know, again, by asking for one of these green forms to complete. We're going to begin the evening talking about an issue that's very relevant to one of the a couple of the issues that President Chu alluded to, and that deals with relationships between law enforcement and immigrant communities and our sanctuary city policy. Over the course of the Obama administration, there's been an expansion of a program called Secure Communities that, in fact, operates in a manner that essentially anyone who gets fingerprinted, those fingerprints today can end up in the hand by law enforcement. Those fingerprints can end up in the hands of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, who in turn, if they feel that they have information that individual might be removable or subject to deportation, can put a hold or detain on that individual. The some of you may know that the Obama administration is on pace to deport 1 million individuals from the United States, which is a number that's larger than all 8 years of the Bush administration. And much of those removals have been a result of secure communities. Many of the removals have resulted in separation of families. Many of those removals are individuals who are not dangerous to the community. Many of the attempted removals, and I dare say even removals, have been of individuals who should not be removed, that are in fact citizens. Believe it or not, immigration authorities are capable of making mistakes, and it happens often. And so, on that note, I want to invite our first speaker to the microphone, and that is Archie Coley, who is a senior fellow at the Warren Institute across the Bay at UC Berkeley. Prior to working at the Warren Institute, she was a subcommittee counsel and judiciary committee representing Representative Howard Berman. And prior to that, she was the director at Unite Union in Washington, D.C. Ms. Archie, thank you for joining us.
Since you're an invited speaker, you can take more time.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. I don't have the power. I can turn to the clerk for that.
Well, thank you for inviting me here. I'm so pleased to be here. I'm so pleased that you're addressing these community kind of issues that often don't get the attention that they deserve. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Mentioning briefly the secure community. So as Professor King mentioned, secure communities is a federal program, and we've all seen the controversy in Arizona. Well, really, this is a program that's in over 3,000 jails in the country. It's, the federal government is planning that the program will be in every jail in this country next year, by the end of next year. And the impacts that we've been talking about in Arizona are not all that different with this program. Because once police know that if I arrest this person and they, I take them to the jail, they'll have an immigration check. For certain police officers, this is an invitation to racial profiling. And we've seen this, there's been a lot of anecdotal evidence of pretextual arrests, of people being brought into the jail, never actually being charged with a crime, but then sent to immigration authorities. And so this is really a pipeline for deportation. And there's been many concerns, and one of the responses recently, the most exciting development, has been in California, which is the Trust Act. And this is a bill that's passed the Senate, and it's on target to pass the Assembly. And what it says is, okay, you, the federal government, have put this program in place to target the worst of the worst. The goal of this program was, we're going to get rid of serious violent offenders. We're going to get rid of murderers and rapists. But what we know from the data is that's not actually what the program's doing. The vast majority of people who are being deported through this program are either non-offenders or low-level offenders. So we, California, have come to a decision where what we're going to do is when you ask us to hold someone for you, we will only hold serious and violent convicted felons. People we feel who are a threat to our communities, we will hold that narrow category. But we're not just going to hold anyone who's brought in. And so this is a really important piece of legislation, and it's the first piece of legislation taken on by the entire state. We still have, there are other communities, Cook County in Illinois, Washington, D.C., actually the District of Columbia has recently passed a similar law. So there are now, there appears to be what folks in the community are calling an anti-Arizona trend. And California is really the first state to start to really take this on at this level. And I would encourage all of you learn more about the Trust Act and do what you can to support that and those efforts.
Thank you.
Stay in case you have questions.
Yeah, are there any questions that any commissioners have about the communities?
You should stay up there.
Yeah.
Any follow-up on information to take advantage of Polly's expertise?
Is there anything we can do to make sure it gets passed all the way?
You have the list, right?
And I have a few suggestions.
Yeah. I mean, I would encourage... send a support letter to Assemblymember Amiana's office. We can give you guys for the record the website where you can access the support letter. Meet with your local police and sheriff and share your concerns. I think Jackson's is still you guys. For folks outside of San Francisco, you can pass a resolution at your city council or at the board of supervisors. I would actually also say I would encourage the governor's office because that's something that a lot of people are asking whether he's voiced an opinion on this. And as far as we know, he has publicly said one way or the other. So
let me ask you, in my opinion, a fundamental question. Do you think that given ordinances like San Francisco Sanctuary Ordinance that somehow secure communities undermines those types of ordinances?
Oh, yes, completely.
How so?
Because there is no, the check happens without any input from local police. It's automatic. So when the fingerprints are taken, they're sent to immigration authorities, and local jurisdictions have no input whether those fingerprints are sent to immigration authorities. So the reason the Trust Act is so important is that when immigration authorities come back and say to local jurisdictions, hold this person, that's where you have discretion. And that's where lawfully you can say, no, you know what, this is within our discretion. We don't have to hold these people for extra time at our expense. And that's another issue for local jurisdictions. For ICE for up to 72 hours, depending on what happens, you're putting that bail. And if you're holding a U.S. citizen unlawfully, you're the one who's going to get sued, not ICE. And so those, you're liable. And so all of those issues are issues of concern for local personnel. Not to mention the big one, which is trust, which is really why this is so appropriately named. Communities are fearful of the police. They're not going to show up, to be witnesses, to crime, to seek help.
Right. And one final question for me, anyway. What has been the Obama administration's response to the pressure that's been put on it by communities who have complained about the effect of secure communities? In other words, hasn't there been immigrant rights advocates who have complained about the implementation of secure communities? And what has been ICE's response?
They are very committed to this program. They are not backing down. In fact, just a few days ago, John Morton, the head of ICE, testified in front of Congress saying, this is the program for us. The one thing they have done is put into place a new policy of prosecutorial discretion where they're going to review cases of everybody who's in deportation proceedings. But from what we've already seen, that's very few people are going to benefit from that. Very, very few people. And if you have been convicted of a minor crime, you're probably not going to benefit from that.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I had a question for the chair. You mentioned that there's anecdotal evidence of non-offenders and citizens being held up under this.
Actually, we have data.
And you do have data. That was my question.
Yeah,
you have data, the numbers, and is there any local data, if you have for San Francisco specifically, or is it just statewide data?
We did a study, Secure Community Spending Numbers, which I can, I can give to you for the record, and in which we found it was national data set. And that's what we got from the government to evaluate. And And basically, we found 1.5% were U.S. citizens. So nationwide, we estimate about 3,600 U.S. citizens have been caught up in the secure communities, have been arrested by immigration authorities.
How about non-offenders or
non-offenders, the rates are 25 to 29%. So, I mean, that's a significant chunk.
Yeah.
And what happens is that's really, my intuition is those are people who are arrested but never charged because they're minor crimes and they're often contextual arrests. They probably don't even have the evidence to charge that person. So, yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you again.
Can I ask a question?
Public comments on these topics will come after the speakers.
Right, yeah. You're going to have to reserve it for later. So sorry. Thank you. Okay, so Ms. Arteaga referred to the fact that some of the response that the Obama administration has had to the criticism is that the Obama administration has announced it a couple of times. For example, last June and then most recently, again, a few weeks ago, that it would exercise discretion, prosecutorial discretion, to not deport people that are low priority. And there's been a long history of that, and as Ms. Arteaga said, the people who benefit from that have been disappointingly low at a rate. The rates that I've seen are, depending on the city, is anywhere from 10 to 15% of the cases that are being reviewed are being terminated. In response to more pressure on the Obama administration, a few weeks ago, the Obama administration announced that, very specifically, that DREAM Act students that who have gone to school here in California and who are undocumented, if they have completed school and they're below the age of 30, that they can apply for deferred action and get employment authorization. And many people don't realize that in the country, the estimated 10 to 12 million undocumented immigrants, there's another estimate that at least 10% are of Asian descent. And there's another estimate in the state of California, then in the Cal State system and the UC system, that as much as a quarter of the undocumented students in California are of Asian descent. And tonight we've invited a student to speak with us who, at least on the face of it, may benefit from the recent Obama announcement, and that is Kiko Aspilada.
Hi, good evening everyone. My name is Kiko Aspilada and I'm a member of ASPIRE, which stands for Asian Students Promoting Immigrant Rights Through Education, and it's housed under the Asian Law Caucus. What we do is we provide a safe space for undocumented Asian Pacific Islander youth, and more than that, we also advocate for the Federal DREAM Act, and we also advocated for the California DREAM Act. And we also do workshops for high schools, colleges, and nonprofit organizations for them to learn what it's really like to be undocumented youth in the United States and the kind of plight that we face. Let me tell you a little bit more about myself. I came from the Philippines when I was 10 years old, legally, and because of certain circumstances, my mother and my brother also fell out of status. For me, growing up as an undocumented youth, I faced many fears. Fear of being rejected, isolated, and most of all, I fear deportation because of being separated from my family. And these fears, it was the only thing I can think of last year when I actually came to ASPIRE and they gave me a way to empower myself and do something about the issues that we're going through. And currently I'm a Bachelor's of Science in Nursing student in San Francisco State University. And I will graduate next year and after I graduate, I fear not being able to take the NCLEX and work and become somebody in the society to help our community. Until on June 15, when President Obama announced the executive order, which is the deferred action, and it basically means delaying a person's removal proceedings for 2 years. And when you are granted deferred action, you can apply for a work permit. And with that work permit, there's going to be 800,000 dreams that will become a reality. Well, for at least 2 years, right? So what we worry is that it's only a temporary solution, and the requirements for it is very strict. You have to obtain from the United States under the age of 16, currently under the age of 31. You are currently still in school or have graduated high school, GED, or have honorably discharged from the Coast Guard or the Armed Forces of the United States, and have not been convicted of any felony offenses, misdemeanors, multiple misdemeanors, or otherwise pose a threat to national security or public safety. There isn't any update on what it really means to say a significant misdemeanor. For all we know, it could be like a DUI or something very small. There are a number of concerns with the deferred action, especially because we do not have the application process as of yet. The DA status can be terminated at any time by the Department of Homeland Security by their discretion. And by applying, we may need to release the information of our family members, and they also have a hold of our fingerprints. And when the time is up, 2 years, what will happen then? Will they just deport all of us? And what about the information that they gathered for our families? Would they deport them otherwise because they are not within these requirements that is needed for deferred action? We will receive updates in the coming weeks. They said 60 days from June 15. And no one should be applying for this relief as of yet because the process is not confirmed. And also, assistance should be sought from licensed, experienced immigration attorneys. Asian Law Caucus will actually be hosting a series of clinics on Thursday, August 23rd at 5:30 p.m. at our office, which is 55 Columbus Avenue. Here in San Francisco, we actually have a flyer. We have some flyers back there. Please help us outreach to your networks to have this word out there. And this is an important step forward, but we can't be complacent, for this is only a temporary solution. We must keep fighting for the Federal Dream Act and comprehensive immigration reform, because we need to have a permanent solution of our immigration borders. Beyond outreaching, we'll need you as allies to achieve our long-term goals. Thank you very much.
Good. Congratulations on everything that you've done so far in your life. Are there any comments or questions that any members of the Okay, let me also invite up to this microphone Anup Prasad, who is a staff attorney at the Asian Law Caucus, who specializes in immigration law. And we asked Mr. Prasad to talk about some of the other issues that the Asian Law Caucus encounters in the immigration area. Mr. Prasad.
Sure. So both the work I do at the Asian Law Caucus is directly representing people in deportation proceedings. Thank you. So the bulk of the work I do at Asian Law Caucus is directly representing people who have found themselves in deportation proceedings. And only the second was are these comments about SCOM's prospect. SCOM has completely changed the face of deportation in the world. The number of We've had many cases, people who are domestic violence survivors being reported to RESTCOM. We've had cases of people in RESTCOM reported for things like selling ice cream without a license. And it's tough for really these numbers to sink in and how overwhelming they are. And so I just wanted to give you a snapshot of the last 48 hours of my life as a staff attorney and how ESCOM has impacted just the last 48 hours on that. On Saturday morning, Asian Law Caucus, as part of the Texas State Indian Legal Education Network, held a immigration clinic at Bill Gates University. We had somewhere around 50 people coming to the clinic. I spent part of the morning talking to a woman in San Francisco resident who just broke down sobbing because her son, who was 18 years old, had been arrested for ESCOM and was transferred to a detention center in Southern California, run by a private corporation for profit. After talking to her for a few minutes, I realized that her son had obtained derivative citizenship for his father. And so it's not just theoretical that U.S. citizens are being detained and reported to ESCOM. It is happening. We see it right early. This afternoon, I spent most of the afternoon at a hearing for a gentleman who's detained and was picked up from ESCOM. He's been here since the 1980s and entered as a refugee with his family and has serious mental health issues. The entire time I've represented him, he has not been able to remember my name. He doesn't understand his lawyer. He doesn't understand why he's detained. He doesn't understand why he goes to court. He doesn't know who the judge is. And he got picked up for ESCOM on a minor arrest for disorderly conduct in prison proceedings. And time again, we see ESCOM putting the most vulnerable members of our society. Time and time again, including residents of Chinatown, we see getting arrested at ESCOM because of mental health issues for really minor offenses in prison proceedings and detained. And these are also people who don't have the same access to legal resources. And so the Trust Act is an enormous step towards protecting these people. And I highly encourage and resolution to continue to strengthen this in support of the Trust Act and push on the ground to sign the Trust Act.
Thank you.
I just want to say two things. Unfortunately, I have to kick off another community meeting in my district, so I'm going to have to leave, and I'm going to ask my aide, Ming Chen, to take my place. But piggybacking on that last comment, 14 years ago, I was an immigrant rights attorney. And like you, I had cases of legal immigrants who were falsely detained, who were imprisoned, in some cases literally beaten by federal immigration agents. And this is a phenomenon that hasn't existed for our entire nation's history, but I know has become much more intense and much more extreme in recent years. And I want to let you know that we have a majority at our board of supervisors that want to make sure that we stamp out this type of illegal federal law enforcement activity here in San Francisco. I also want to say to the student who spoke, thank you for your courage. I want to thank all the Dream students and all the students who have had such difficult paths here. For those of you to speak up and really, I think, put a face to the immigrant rights issue that I think is going to change this debate. I can't thank you enough for what you're doing, and I hope someday that you or some of your colleagues will run for office and we will put you in office for some of the work that you're doing. But again, thank you all for being out here, and we look forward to working with you.
Who are 60 years or above has been significantly increased.
And in San Francisco, almost 15,000 seniors speak very limited English, and 60% of them speak only Chinese. This proportion will be even more dramatic in District 3, especially in the Chinatown area, because regardless of age, monolingual immigrants prefer to live, stay, and work in a place where they can understand what's happening in the surrounding. Through the DAS, Adult and Aging Service, Department of Adult Aging Services, self-help for the elderly serves different services. Approximately 500 seniors per day attend to our senior centers in District 3 only for meals, community service, case management, and citizenship classes. And through OPWD funds, our Chinatown One-Stop Career Age Center, home health aid and housekeeping training program provide services to their individuals who can only speak Chinese to empower themselves and to serve the community in some way without the language barriers. Not only providing funded services, Center for the Elderly and many different CDOs also helps those monolingual Chinese speakers. We consistently act as translators and interpreters for our community, and help many of the major city departments such as DPH, HSA, SFMTA, Health and Rec, and SFPD. This further stretches our already limited resources as a nonprofit organization. But we will not stop doing this because we understand that the clients come to us as a nonprofit because they trust us and have faith in us. Finally, again, I would like to welcome you to our center and also want to take this opportunity to thank the Immigrants' Rights Commission for advocating for more language access service for the residents in San Francisco, especially to the seniors.
Thank you.
And we also invited Chinese for affirmative action. Is there a representative?
I don't think they're here.
Far from the complicated. self-help for the elderly, April. I know you guys helped to set up the room. Thank you very much for all your effort in doing this. Before we get to any other public speakers who would like to come forward, I do want to put a name to the page. Earlier, I alluded to the fact that there is a representative here from U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, and her name is Lucy Rosemary Fan. I know her as Rosemary. I've known her since 1971. She's the Community Relations Officer at the San Francisco District Office of USCIS, and she's more of a friend than a foe. Lucy, you want to? Thank you for joining us.
Okay.
So all the hard immigration questions we're going to ask her.
Not on secure communities. That's not USCIS.
But on maybe qualified. Maybe on the Dream Act. So we actually have come to a very important part of the evening, and that's to give you an opportunity to speak. If you would like to make a public comment. And again, in order to do so, we ask you to fill out one of these forms so that we can have a record and introduce you properly. We do have, so far, at least four speakers, so I want to call the first person up, and it's Clarissa Sanchez of Catholic Charities, CYO Refugee and Immigrant Services.
Chair. Commissioners, good evening. My name is Clarissa Sanchez, and I am an immigration counselor at the Refugee and Immigrant Services Program at Catholic Charities. Thank you for the opportunity to provide public comment. First of all, I wanted to give a brief overview. Some of the commissioners already know a little bit about what we do, but perhaps for our audience here tonight that's joining us, we provide direct legal immigration services for anybody who walks in our doors. It's low cost. We are Board of Immigration Appeals accredited representatives. And the young lady who's here from Aspire had mentioned regarding the June 15th Department of Homeland Security memos. It's a memorandum that President Obama announced. She had mentioned that she urges those who may believe that they're eligible to apply for this immigration benefit to to go to an accredited or go to a licensed attorney. However, I also wanted to bring up that not only should they go to a licensed attorney, they can also go to a Board of Immigration Appeals accredited agency with Board of Immigration Appeals accredited representatives. And at Catholic Charities CYO, we are all Board of Immigration Appeals accredited representatives who have been through an extensive training process, application process to be accredited by the Board of Immigration Appeals to practice immigration law, just as an immigration attorney does. We are also able to not only represent at Citizenship and Immigration Services interviews, but also at Immigration Court. There's only five of us, and we work very, very hard to provide a very high quality of legal immigration services, because we take very, very great pride in the work that we do, because we love the work that we do. We're there not for the pay, but because we want to be able to help our community, especially because we're fortunate enough to be able to provide low-cost legal immigration services. So I just wanted to make sure that we inform the community of that. We are open, so please feel free to come through our doors. We hold a weekly immigration workshop every Monday at 2 o'clock. Registration begins at 12, from 12 to 1:30, and we take the first 15 people, unfortunately, due to capacity issues. So we invite you to attend. It only costs $40. Now, the young lady from the fire also mentioned that there's a clinic that's being put on by the AA Law Office, and I am so happy to hear that they're doing this, as well as other organizations within the community. And I would invite everyone to please attend that, or any other organization that is holding these events throughout the city and even outside of the city limits. We at Catholic Charities have held three already. The first one it's an informational session is what we're calling it, not a clinic, because the regulations as to the application process has yet not been handed down by the Department of Homeland Security. So we invite you, I'm running out of time. We have three already, one in San Mateo County, one in Sacramento, another one in Marin County, and the fourth one, which is going to be this Wednesday at 6 o'clock at St. Mary's Cathedral at 1111 Go Street here in San Francisco. Again, from 6 to 8, or excuse me, I always mispronounce that. Thank you. and I brought flyers here. It is free of charge, and if you're interested, please come join us. Go to I believe it was August 23rd event, any event that's out there, please go out there and get the right information, because it is out there free of cost.
Any questions? Ms. Sanchez, can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
So the aspiring student left us with a note of caution in terms of what's going to happen after the 2 years. Do you have the same, I don't want to put words in your mouth, skepticism or concern that after 2 years that we're not sure what might happen to an individual who fills out these applications now, and their identity and their whereabouts is made known to ICE?
We don't hold the same sentiment simply because those regulations have yet not come out. However, we do speculate that we want the applicants to be as cautious as possible and to really consider this decision very, very carefully, because one thing that we need to consider is we do not know who is going to be elected in November, and we don't know who that president is going to be. Therefore, we do not know if this policy is going to be reversed. So we do caution this decision to be very carefully made, even though you may think that you are eligible. I know there's been a lot of talk amongst other agencies, and in law firms as well, who have mentioned that they're planning to hold clinics where they're actually going to review the documents that the applicants will be submitting to ensure that they feel comfortable to apply. We will be holding those as the regulations become available. And as I mentioned, other agencies will be doing that as well. And we very much caution anybody who has a criminal record to please seek the advice of an attorney or a BIA-accredited agency who has experience both in criminal law and immigration law, because though I'm not sure if anybody's aware of what an expungement is, but basically in terms of criminal law, an expungement pretty much erases a crime that occurred. However, when it comes to immigration law, that is going to show up. It is not expunged, it is not removed from your criminal record, and the very, very important thing to keep in mind. We will be talking about all this and in greater detail, as well as some of the suggested documents for potential applicants to obtain in the interim before the regulations come out. And we will discuss that in greater detail on Wednesday, the 18th. So we are just simply advising these applicants to just be careful, make a careful consideration. And on another note, one thing that she did not mention was that they will be eligible, the applicants, if approved, will be able to reapply before that two-year period expires. Currently, there's a form that will be submitted to be able to obtain the employment authorization document, which is the work authorization card. That document, the application must be submitted 3 months prior. It takes about 3 months for it to be adjudicated. So assuming that what we anticipate to come out in terms of the regs, if an applicant is granted deferred action, they would have to apply 3 months before that deferred act or the employment authorization expires, and they'd be able to renew it for another 2 years. At least that's what we're advising now to do. However, that can all change once the regulations come out. That is being accumulated is going to be either used either for or against the applicant. We can only speculate because the application has yet not, we don't know what the application looks like. We don't know what is going to be asked on that application. I know in other applications for other immigration benefits, they do ask for parents' information as to where they live, their date of birth, where they were born, if they have status or not. So we don't know what this application is going to look like as of yet. We are hoping we're not going to ask those things. However, just as a minor example, there is an immigration benefit called the non-immigrant visa status, and which confers immigration benefit of path of legalization to victims of violent crime. And those types of visas are very generous. And the reason why I bring up this example is because In this type of case, this information is not. We've never experienced, we've never seen the information that's submitted by an applicant who does not have status and who hopes to obtain the U visa status, have that information used against them when a case is denied. So we're hoping the same thing is going to happen with deferred action for what we're calling DREAM Act eligible youth, which is this June 15th memo. We're hoping that happens, but again, this is all speculation, and anybody who is out there, and in particular, I know in the Latino community, notarios, who are folks who are out there unlawfully practicing law, who are not licensed attorneys, and some unscrupulous attorneys, unfortunately, who are out there to make a quick buck. I've seen several ads that have already been put out throughout the country saying, hey, I can get you an EAD card, an employment authorization document, in 3 months. No, that's not correct, because these regulations haven't even come out. And people who are not in deportation proceedings can't even apply for this until after August 15th. It is suggested that if a student or an applicant that is eligible is currently in deportation proceedings, to please contact Citizenship and Immigration Services right away. However, if someone is promising this, to do this right away, it's a scam. And we don't even know what the fees are yet either, because the application, as I mentioned, has not yet come out. I know for sure what we've been telling folks is, and just save money, because we don't know what this is going to look like. At least we know that the application for employment authorization, that cost $380. If that is not a fee that is waived, we do believe that for sure, at least it's going to cost $380. But I've pretty much been telling folks, at least save up $1,000. It could be more, it could be less, we don't know. But just save up now, because you don't want to be scrambling last minute if you aren't eligible and you make a decision to apply.
Thank you. The next speaker on our list is Mei Ling Wong of Self Help for the Elderly.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Minli Wang from South Africa, the Elderly. My colleague just mentioned, so welcome you to Fun and Faith Wellness Center, where the seniors exercise together and have fun together so as to maintain their healthy social life here. So just thank you for providing this opportunity to hear our voice. And I think it was a profound vision and a wise decision for the city to fund the citywide one-stop priority center, including Chinatown one-stop, for the employment services and also the workforce training in the healthcare academy, green academy, Cityville, and now it's Tech SF and also hospitality initiative. However, for those new immigrants who have limited English proficiency, they are not able to benefit from those programs due to their language barrier. So we urge the city to provide more funding for the linguistically appropriate training programs for new immigrants so that they can earn a skill, earn the supporting wage, and become contributing members of this society. So I believe that working together, we can make this society, the community, a better place to live. And working together, we can help immigrants merge into this society and live a healthy and healthy life in the United States of America. Thank you for your consideration and action.
Comments or the next person is Jerry Rodriguez. Next speaker is Richard Al.
I was going to ask a question. I want to know what happened in our police department. If a police department arrests somebody today, and then the officer determines this person is not U.S. citizen, what is the procedure going? Does the police department send the fingerprints or whatever information to immigration office or the FBI or whatever? We have two experts in there, David Chiu and this lady. They are not here now. And you have my address. I hope that you will tell me exactly what it is. You know, from time to time, I heard from the papers, San Francisco this and that. San Francisco is very protective of everybody, civil rights. But, you know, being from the federal, from the state, and then the county, and San Francisco is very much limitation, contrary to whatever something is wrong. I hope that I will get this information. Now, also this public comment, right? Can I add my public comment at this time?
Sure.
Recently, the health department closed down quite a few restaurants, especially on Washington Street, the some of the most famous, but across the street is the other. And down there is House of Louis, and this restaurant has been operating 10, 15, or 20 years. Now, I have no problem with the health department. You know, they write a lot. The efficiencies is not clean, or you have to fix your wire, your refrigerator leaking. But these restaurant owners or operators, they are immigrants, and they work so hard, you know. They have to pay rent, and then they save some money. When they come to this country, they work for somebody. Eventually, they become owners. They don't have the time, and they did not go to English class. I hope that all these documents, you know, the write-ups, and I saw some of those write-ups, you know, it's in handwriting, and very hard for me to understand the handwriting too. I hope that since you, the city, put in a responsibility to the language access, right? It's my understanding that you will look into it, that there, all these write-ups, that there's a slot. Would you like to have this in Chinese, in Spanish, or whatever language? Then indicate it. Then the department should, translate it, let the operator understand it. And I want to add, instead of handwriting, it should be produced by a computer. Well, in the old days, typewritten. So I hope that your commission will see to it. And let those operator, the owner of the restaurant, they want to keep it clean. They want the continuous customers come in. But they cannot read it. And some of them, the restaurant owner showed to me, I say, I cannot decipher for you. I understand what he says. Thank you.
Hi, I wanted to respond to you very quickly. I'm right here. My name is Amy. I'm one of the staff to Supervisor David Chu's office. So in reference to the restaurants closing, our office, as well as the Office of Small Business, Jane Gong and I, have been working very closely with the restaurant owners of both Sam Wo as well as Louise to work with them to fix their code violations so that the Department of Public Health, Department of Buildings, and the Fire Department can give them new permits to reopen their restaurants. So that's a work in progress, and we're in very close touch with the owners there to make sure that they've got all the information that they need to actually do what needs to get done for them to reopen. So that is something that our office is doing. And in reference to your first question about how local police deal with secure communities, implementation of secure communities, I'm not an attorney. I don't know how to answer that question. I don't know if anyone else on this panel does, but certainly I'd be very happy to take down your information, make sure that I do get an answer from you, and then communicate that to you. So I'll give you my card before we leave for the evening.
Right. And actually, on that first question that you have, that's something that this commission is actually in the process of understanding better itself.
Mitchell Bonner.
Concerns I had. One is, I know of four students in the city who have finished the programs but have not gone home. Some of them are essentially out of status now and are waiting for some kind of immigration reform to see if they can legalize their status. Another problem here is that foreign students to work have to have a work permit. But a lot of them don't have it. Someone I've talked to has indicated that they were never told by either the school that they go to or the restaurant or whatever has hired them that they need a work permit. So a lot of them are working and probably being paid below minimum wage. They can't complain because they don't have a work permit. Okay, so I think they should do something either to the schools or to the businesses to say that need to notify the students that need this. Of course, some of them probably won't do it because they want cheap labor. There's also a good mention that some of the restaurants around here also underpay the workers. I'm aware of that because I've been a witness at a labor standards hearing a few years ago about certain Chinese restaurants, so I know a lot about that service.
Thank you for your information. Peter Mancina.
Hello, Commissioners and Director Cohen. I'm Peter Mancina, and it's nice to see you again. I'm working on my dissertation right now on Sanctuary City in San Francisco. And to respond to Commissioner Hing's question about how a sanctuary affected by SCOM, 15 actually is that the provisions about reporting are obviously undermined, but actually there's still a lot in the sanctuary ordinance that allows San Francisco to continue being a sanctuary city in the sense of accessing city services, people being unafraid to go see those services. So those are still in effect. Another thing I'd like to respond to is that with ESCOM, you know, a lot of times we think about the people who are deported, and what we also can get into is the kids that are left behind. There's actually a law right now in the state Senate, SB 1064, Senator De Leon. I don't know if you all have all talked about this. Okay. Well, so I just wanted to add that into the equation that there is this law that will allow for family members to gain access to be guardians of children, and that their legal status will not be a determinative factor in whether they are considered fit or not to become a legal guardian, so that their parents do not lose complete connection with them. Oftentimes, parents lose custodial rights to their children when they're deported. So those are the only things I wanted to add. If you already have questions about that, I'll leave it at that.
Are there any other people who would like to? I'm actually going to put Rosemary on the spot.
Call you next.
Rosemary, you heard some of the concerns on the June 15th announcement and other things, and I wanted to give CIS an opportunity to respond to anything that you might have heard. I know that nothing's official, and maybe that's all you want to say, but do you have a response to anything that you heard from? The commission would appreciate it if you do.
Immigration law. Immigration law is the most complex statute, as you all know. So it is difficult, and it is best to go consult the experienced folks who know what they are talking about. And it could be attorneys, it could be recognized agencies. And the important message I want to give is do not apply now, you know, because right now a lot of for-profit outfits have been saying, hey, you know, give me $5,000. I know someone who knows someone, you know, and we'll get this done for you. That is the most important message, which I heard all the agencies give today. And I actually brought with me some brochures, and I wanted to show. These really neat wallet-sized holdouts that tell people where to get immigration help. I would have to say that we didn't do this. This is from the Federal Trade Commission, that they have something called the Sentinel system, where people can go complain that they have been scammed. So I encourage you to pick up, you know, one of these and bring some back to your office. You know, they're in Chinese, Spanish, and English. So it is, you can put it in your pocket. As well as the two brochures. Unfortunately, I don't have it in Chinese because I ordered, but it didn't come in time, so I have the English and the Spanish. So at this point, I echo everything that was said here. You know, like, people should look at their options. People should wait for the regulations to come out. And certainly, if people feel like that's the best option for them, they should apply. At this point, unfortunately, I do not have information other than what I'm sure everybody has seen. You know, this is a 9-page Q&A about deferred action. And I also made a little handout that shows people where to find it on our website. And on the back side, it would be a description of what if I have never been approached or apprehended by DHS or put into removal proceedings? How should I use this? What if I already have a final order of removal or I have a case? You know? So there are three scenarios in the back that is very useful, and I would encourage people to look at this. And finally, I know I'm just way over 3 minutes. Finally, if you are interested, anyone who is interested, who would like to get advisories from me about not just this, but general immigration updates, please give me your email address. I will put you on my list, and I will send you things like these, you know, as soon as they come out. I've got Adrian on my list, so she gets all my things, and you know, some of you, you know, do get it. So and I'm here to help. So if you have other questions or other feedback or other things that you want me to carry back to the to my agency, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I wonder if the representative from the Office of Small Business would be willing to address this.
Sure.
So, good evening, Honorable Commissioners and Director Khan. Regina Dickey-Greasy, I'm the Director of the Office of Small Business. And I have with me, as Board President Chu mentioned, Jane Gong from my office. So there are two functions with our office. We have direct services, and then we also have a commission that advises on policy. and legislation that's moving through the Board of Supervisors and its effect on small businesses. So I'm first going to start off by talking about our services. In May of 2008, the Office of Small Business opened, and we opened to be able to provide services to our small businesses, helping them navigate through the licensing permitting process that they need to know to engage with the city and also at the federal and state level. And if the voters approved the city budgeting for our office, because it's navigating through our licensing permitting and zoning is very complex for someone who speaks English, let alone for somebody who doesn't speak English. So I have two staff members who work the counter, who do the client services, and Jane speaks Cantonese, Mandarin, and Shanghainese, and my other staff member speaks Spanish. Those are the two largest sort of immigrant and language business populations we have other than English here in the city. I think, you know, to speak to this gentleman's comments here, one of the things that we see with different departments is they do not have their applications for license and permits in other languages. So what we do when we service clients, we sit down with them, we ask them, what is the business that you want to open up? We ask them if they've engaged in a business plan, do they know how they're financing their business? Do they? And those sorts of technical services we do not provide since we're a city government, but the city does fund nonprofits who help provide those different services in different languages throughout the city, what we call them our neighborhood economic development organizations. And those, some of those are META, Southeast Community Center, Renaissance Center, Urban Solutions, and you may be familiar with some of them, and WISE, Women's Initiative. And then the other component I think that what I feel is very important to share is what's very important for our office is we don't want to have people have to hire expediters to help them understand what they need to do to get through the city's regulatory process to open their business or continue to do business. But it is complex. So it's very important for us that we spend the time with the individual when they come in to really understand what's required of them. And of course, we also partner with OLSE, and we have all the materials on hand and the information in terms of our unique San Francisco labor regulations as well. So right from the beginning, really trying to inform businesses what's the full gamut that you need to understand in opening your business. Then the second component, because many of the individuals who we see, I like to sort of refer as our low-income businesses. These are individuals that are not well capitalized. They're self-funded often in terms of starting their businesses, which is often a lot of our immigrant businesses as well. And so it's important for us that we're keeping San Francisco a place that also immigrants can come and open businesses. So a lot of our comments, the commission's comments, in regards to legislation and policy and fees is really also look through this lens. You know, when we're creating a new fee or the cost of costs or taking a look at impact fees, the transit impact fee is now up for discussion and review, and they want to lower the definitions to increase the ability to collect the impact fees, but that has the potential to really have an adverse effect on our businesses who are immigrants, not well capitalized, and really increases the cost of doing business in the city. So for us, it's extremely important that we also keep this an affordable city for businesses to start and grow in. And I encourage you to also, you know, talk to our planning department and economic development department in terms of when we're doing economic development and we're talking about affordable housing, we also need to have affordable commerce space as well in that development. And what we have seen in some of the developments is that the commercials, when we're building mixed use, the commercial space actually ends up not being affordable. And so often the businesses that are moving in are not necessarily complementary to the housing and the and individuals living in those buildings. So I'll leave it at that, and I'm happy to take questions. I do want to say that for our office, being able to provide information in multiple languages is extraordinarily important for us. So we do have our starting a business booklet in English, Spanish, and Chinese. Understanding all the complexities of the ADA regulations that businesses need to know about, we have that in 7 languages, and our brochures as well.
Also, Jorge Saavedra of the Office of Labor Standards and Enforcement.
Hello, I work with the Office of Labor Standards Enforcement, and our office enforces San Francisco's unique labor ordinances, such as the minimum wage, which is $10.24 per hour, which is higher than the state minimum wage of $8, or the federal minimum wage of $7.25 per hour. We also enforce the paid sick leave ordinance, which is a unique ordinance. Well, it's becoming a little bit less unique. There's a number of cities now that are adopting similar ordinances, but basically, it requires employers to provide paid sick leave to their employees. And we enforce the healthcare security ordinance, which applies to employers, large employers or mid to large size employers, and requires that they provide some healthcare to their employees. Our office also enforces a number of ordinances that apply to city contractors and our prevailing wage unit, et cetera. Our office and our minimum wage, that's primarily what I do, is minimum wage enforcement. We enforce the minimum wage without regard to immigration status. All employees are entitled to receive a standard wage, and regardless of what their immigration status is, we believe that it's important that they get the same protections under the laws as everybody else. Our office does have a number of employees that speak Spanish, including myself, and we have employees who speak Cantonese and Mandarin. One employee that speaks Thai, and we also make available interpretation for other languages. So we want employees to come forward. And anybody else, the gentleman over here, Mr. Bonner, said that he happens to know that some employees are not receiving standard wage. We accept complaints from the public. Anybody with personal knowledge of any violations of state or city ordinances, we also work closely with the Labor Commissioner's Office and try to help them out in identifying minimum wage violations and violations of labor laws. We don't work very closely with the federal government because they tend to enforce all of their laws, including immigration laws. So we primarily steer people to the state. If anybody has any questions, I'll be available. Thank you very much.
I have a question with Lucy. May I know if you have other, for this booklet, do you have any other, do you have anything that is in other languages?
It's in Chinese and Spanish. I brought a stack over in the back, so maybe I can bring some up. But I also have the other brochure that is in hard copies. And it's available in 14 languages, this one.
Okay. Any other questions? Mr. Saavedra?
Yes.
You said that you do not work very closely with federal officials. That means you do not report your findings to us.
So we certainly do not.
This one is in Chinese. I can order some, but it's not come yet.
And we encourage
it's 14 languages.
Folks to come to our office, the State Labor Commissioner's office, as opposed to going to the U.S. Department of Labor. They do have a wage and hour unit, but they seem to be a lot less active in San Francisco than in California in general. But we do not discourage them, certainly. I think you have a right to complain to whoever you'd like. But they do enforce federal immigration law that the Department of Labor does. So some employees, we have a lot of employees that perhaps are not documented, and we don't want to put at risk in that way.
Are there any other public comments that anyone from the audience would like to speak? Very much. This meeting is adjourned.